Hello, everybody, and welcome to Whispers on AM 1600, WKKX, the Valley's Watchdog, and UPRN, the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. It is 6:11 p.m., 70 degrees here in downtown Wheeling. Couldn't tell you what it's like the rest of the world, but I know it's raining somewhere in Charleston because I just drove through there. I'm finally back in the studio. I had to be gone last week. My band was out playing, but I'm home, and I'm hopefully not traveling anymore throughout the summer, whatever couple weeks is left. I'm Jordan Klein here with Nick Queen. Lola is gone.
She's somewhere.
She apparently was abducted. Finally abducted. She went home.
Biff well, she is did go to in. Detroit, so you know that's
just as bad.
Yeah.
Our buddy Detroit Biff here is standing in. You want to say hi to everybody, Biff?
How are we doing, guys?
Oh, pretty good. How are you doing now that Windows is on your computer and loves to crash?
Well, now we got everything up and running, and we're doing good, and it's finally nice to have Windows. It's just making the adjustment now, getting used to adjusting, and we're doing good. And
I bet
just
you
rolling.
Linux was a huge adjustment, I'm guessing.
We were happy to finally have Windows, so it's it's making things a lot better on us here, and we're happy for that.
Oh, Bill Gates.
Tell you.
Give us a call, 304-214-1600. If you're out of the area, call us toll-free, 1-866-514-1600.
You know, Bill Gates should advertise on the show.
He should. You hear that? We are using Windows. Windows XP. The more you know. I don't know if that's the right.
I don't think that's the right one.
All right, everybody. Once again, it is time for the annual Ohio County Relay for Life. Join WKKX and our team, the Kellis Crazies, as we honor our beloved friend George Kellis and help raise money for a charity that was dear to his heart. Stop down on Tuesday, August 11th, that's today, to make a donation and sign the WKKX banner to honor George. All proceeds will go to the Ohio County Relay for Life. Let's make George proud. That banner's still up here. We got Kelly out there taking the donations.
We got all
and signing
kinds of people out there.
Oh, it was a full house for the last.
It's wild. Most we've ever had here while we've been here.
Yeah, usually the studio is pretty dead by the time we're here. Everybody's gone home, and we're like, hello? But it's full of people, full of life. Everybody out there honoring George. Come down, sign it. It'll be hung up. Be a part of it, you know? It'll be good times. Everything all right over there?
Yeah, we're good. So, you were gone? You went on tour?
Yeah.
How was that?
It was fun. My hands are killing me.
I bet. Now, you play bongos.
I'm a percussionist. Bongos are the little boop, 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 boop.
You play bongos.
Yes, I'm a percussionist, a conga player.
One of your names online is Bongo Bob.
I know.
Don't try to go, I'm a percussionist.
That was
making yourself sound bigger than you are.
That was
you
my nickname in
bongos.
High school. You play
the bongos. Was it?
Yeah, thank you, though.
No problem. Just rubbing that in. What's wrong with playing bongos? I'd love to learn how to play the bongos.
Yeah, that's right. Want. Buddy.
I'd love to learn how to play something.
We got our guest, Biff.
We do.
All right, Nikki, you want to introduce the guest?
All right, we've got Mr. Jeff Hilling. He's a Bigfoot researcher. For quite a while, he's been interested and intrigued with the Patterson, I'm going to say this, Patterson-Gimli film, always known as the Patterson film. We'll ask him about that. He has a website, pattersonfilm.com. Are you there with us, Jeff?
I'm here, guys.
Hey,
how
Jeff.
You doing out there?
Oh, we're doing pretty good. A little rainy here, but, you know, it happens.
Well, it's hotter than Hades here, so,
man.
That's where you live.
You know, the thing, we've had, like, the coldest summer here ever. It's been down to the 40s at some point. It's been crazy. It's all that global warming that's been going on, you know.
Yeah, right, and if you believe that, I've got a monkey suit to sell you.
You do?
Well, speaking of monkey suits, you're talking about Bigfoot.
Yes.
You can yell at him if you want.
So, you know, the world-famous video that we all see of Bigfoot walking by the creek. Whoa. You think that's real? Do you think that's something that actually happened? Do you think that's a man in a monkey suit? What exactly is it that you are researching?
Well, where I stand, I'm about, personally, about 80% convinced that it was a genuine creature of some sort. Now, that I leave 20% room for possibility that it could have been a hoax. And the only reason I say it only could be a hoax is because I can't figure out how you could do a hoax of what we see in the footage of the Patterson film. Now, if people aren't familiar with the Patterson film, it's that old footage you see, 1967 grainy 16-millimeter film of a Bigfoot creature lurking through the northern woods of Northern California. Everybody's seen it. So if you're not familiar with the term Patterson film, you are familiar with the footage, either seeing it on television or seeing still frame pictures from the Patterson film. It's the most analyzed film in history. The only one more analyzed than the Patterson film is the Kennedy Zapruder film assassination.
Now, why do you say that there's no way it could be I guess staged?
Well, he left 20%. So,
well, I mean,
why are you at 80?
What pushed you past the 50% mark up to 80?
Well, if you look at the film and you look at what has been attempted to be recreated with this film, you'll see that it's not as easy as you might think it would be. Just putting on a monkey suit and getting a camera with some film and pointing and shooting is not going to cut it as far as fooling people. And this Patterson film has been analyzed for over 40 years. And people still cannot conclusively say that it was a hoax. In fact, there are a lot of reputable scientists, anthropologists, people who do studies in film and gait, who are absolutely convinced that it is genuine, that you are seeing a genuine creature there.
Now, I know from, you know, I've read a lot about this. I know someone had mentioned that Patterson had bought a monkey suit from somebody at one point. How can, you know, is this the same suit, or do we know what that suit looked like at all, or any are there any indications that that's what we're seeing here?
Yeah, those are all very good questions. Yeah, actually, the story goes, and I believe it was done in a book recently, the one that brought Mr. Bob Hieronymus out of the woodwork, saying that he was Bigfoot in the suit. But the story goes that Patterson allegedly bought a suit from a man by the name of Philip Morris. Excuse me, there's a couple suit makers out there. And Philip Morris, not the cigarette maker, but he actually makes suits. You can still buy them to this day. I think he's out in North Carolina, I believe. You can buy his suits to this day. Now, his caliber of suits are not something you would see even in a Hollywood B film. They're usually something of a high-grade costume shop around Halloween variety, if you will. So that's what he makes even to this day. He doesn't make and never has made custom costumes. So I show on my website, PattersonFilm.com, pictures of one of the ones that he made, as well as other gorilla suits. Now, back then in 1967, there weren't 30 or 40 different gorilla suits out there, some made in China, some made by, you know, wherever. It was just basically one or two people that you could go to a costume shop and buy a gorilla suit from. And what we see in the Patterson film looks absolutely nothing like a gorilla suit. And I think you can be the judge for yourself and look at some of the pictures on the website. I don't think you're going to find any resemblance whatsoever other than it has fur. Now, the story goes that Roger Patterson allegedly bought a suit from Mr. Chambers, somehow modified it, and then made it look even more believable than Mr. Morris's suits. So you got a guy who's by trade a professional costume maker. You get a guy, Roger Patterson, who's a rodeo guy. He rides horses in a rodeo.
Yeah.
And he modifies it and outdoes you, the costume maker, and makes it look more believable, more better. I don't think so. That story just doesn't hold a lot of water with me.
Well, I mean, I'm watching the video. We got it. We put it up on our website, whispersradio.com, just for anybody out there listening and wants to check it out, just to get a refresher and talk about the differences in gorilla suits. But it's really grainy. So, I mean, it's really hard to really get the details if it was a suit. But my question is, how do we categorize a Bigfoot? Because I'm also watching videos of gorillas walking, and this looks a lot more manly of a walk than animalistic, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. For one, you make a good point. A lot of the crud you see on the computers nowadays, YouTube and all that, it is such poor quality footage of the Patterson film. It's about sixth generation, then it's done on a low resolution and then put onto the internet, so you're not going to get a whole lot of detail. Now, there are better Patterson film footages than other that you can view online, so if people want to view the Patterson film, I encourage them to look at several different showings of it, because some are definitely higher quality, higher resolution, and people have done a better job of digitizing them. So that's one thing you want, is the highest possible quality of this film. Usually that could be obtained by going and watching some old videotapes that feature the Patterson film,
yeah.
Bigfoot. You can go to the store and buy old videotapes or even DVDs nowadays. You know, the History Channel's put out some documentaries. Those have pretty darn good footage, and you will see much better clarity watching them on your TV than a little square that with bad resolution on a computer.
Yeah. Would you categorize Bigfoot as a monkey or a
primate?
A primate. Would you categorize it as a human? Where are we drawing the line? I mean, I guess everybody calls Bigfoot the missing link, okay? But where are we really drawing the line of what it is? Because I don't know. I'm not a big believer. It's hard for me. And like my grandfather, who I know is not out there listening, he you know, ghosts and everything like that is through the roof. The only thing that exists is Bigfoot. You know, so I mean, everybody's got their own, qualms when it comes to the paranormal field. But I mean, it's hard for me to really believe that this is real. I want you to prove it to me.
Okay, well, I'm not really here to prove to anybody it is real.
Okay.
I will tell you this though, I actually think the Patterson film, if it were proven false,
yeah,
today. Undeniably, Bob Gimlin, the man who was there with Roger Patterson, came out and said the whole thing was fake.
Yeah.
Okay. I would think the Patterson film would be more mysterious, more paranormal, more bizarre, more weird than if it were an actual Bigfoot creature.
Really?
The reason is because to this day, it has not been replicated. People have tried it. Lots of time, lots of money, lots of effort.
Really?
Lots of study. And it has not been done even close. So what we're seeing here, if this was a fake, this is something so bizarre, so mysterious, that even 40 plus years later, people still cannot figure out how this magic trick, this illusion, was actually performed. It's like a magician,
the pyramid.
The trick. Nobody can figure out how it was done.
Yeah.
So, and now what do I think Bigfoot actually is?
Yeah.
I don't know. It could be some sort of wild man. I show on my website, PattersonFilm.com. There's a disease out there that people get periodically. It is a very rare disease, but it's a disease where hair actually will cover the entire body. And a lot of sideshow freaks were
JoJo the dog face boy.
Yeah, JoJo the dog face boy. You got the lion man. It's hypertrichosis is the name of this disorder, and this can affect the entire body. And you're right, this creature does not look ape-like at all.
And see, and that's been my biggest hang-up. I mean, it's just been, okay, it looks like, whether or not the suit's been able to be remade, it looks like a man walking. I mean, he's kind of hunched over, but maybe the suit's really heavy, you know, there's a whole lot of hair. And that's always been my big hang-up on this particular video.
I don't blame you. That's a good point. But let's take it from there. Okay, let's say it was a man in a suit. Well, how was this done? What suit was it? How come you can see muscle movement in there? How come the elbow, from the point of the elbow measured up to the top of the shoulder, is abnormally long in comparison to the body? If you're going to fake long arms, you fake them at the glove level. It's impossible to do from the elbow to the top of the shoulder.
That's a good
and
point.
That's what
I've
we're seeing in this Patterson
before.
Film. We see a lot of strange things.
What if it's a midget on stilts?
Midget on stilts, boy.
I'm just playing.
I was like,
boy,
what in the world are you talking
about?
Job.
I mean, that's a, you know, it has a fluid motion. It has a gait, which is something that people have not been able to figure out. Gait is a study of motion and movement.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't look like anything anybody's ever been able to replicate as far as the walk, the look, the fluid motion. There have been several people who have tried to recreate this. BBC is one of them. And then not too long ago, Bob Hieronymus, the man who claims he was in this alleged suit, tried to recreate this with Philip Morris, the costume maker. And they got together, and I think some cable channel did this documentary. It's kind of hard to find, but you can see little clips of it on my website. And it shows Bob Hieronymus walking in the suit that allegedly Philip Morris was the one who made back then, put Bob Hieronymus back in the suit, and it looks silly. It looks like a high school mascot. It looks like a bear. It's something you'd want your kids to have at a birthday party. It wouldn't fool anybody. So it's not as easy as just throwing on a monkey suit through the yard. I mean, I challenge anybody, get some old an old camera and put on a monkey suit, best one you could find, modify it however you can, and see if you can get anything that people talk about for 40 years.
Yeah.
I don't think you can. You can get a lot of bad footage that people put on YouTube all day long.
True.
You know, modern Bigfoot alleged sightings. But nobody pays any attention to them because they're just garbage in comparison to the Patterson film. There is no second best.
True. Jeff, if you can give us a few minutes, we got to take a break. And we'll be right back after the commercials. You're listening to WKKX Wheeling, AM 1600, and UPRN, the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Whispers on AM 1600, WKKX, the Valley's Watchdog, and UPRN, the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. It is 6:34 p.m. here in downtown Wheeling, about 70 degrees. If you want to give us a call, you got a question for the guest, you want to say hi, it's 304-214-1600. If you're out of the area, it's toll-free, 1-866-514-1600. We are talking to Mr. Jeff Hilling, who is a Bigfoot researcher and researches the Patterson film that's world famous, and it's Bigfoot. And Nikki's mic's off.
Here we are. Since we're talking about monkey suits, and this is something I talked to you about I was booking the show, we were talking about, and everybody out there remember, the last time we had a Bigfoot guest on the air was unfortunately the time that there was also this big story that came out of Georgia.
The big hoax.
The big hoax story. What can you tell us about that? I mean, it caught the media's attention, and they started defrosting it, and I mean, honestly, there was no way this could be a Bigfoot. This looked like a monkey. It looked like the suits that you were showing us on your website.
Yeah, and we talked earlier, Nick, about this. At the time, I was actually living in northern Georgia in the mountains where they claimed that they found this.
Oh, really?
Yes. So I was on top of it. It was happening. I was excited, but I was a little skeptical at first when I heard it. Of course, I'm always skeptical about anything I research, even the Patterson film. I still am to a certain degree.
Yeah.
Then it came to light. They showed the picture of the film. This was right around the time I was still developing PattersonFilm.com. I had a lot of it in place. It wasn't actually launched, though. But I had already put this picture of this Bigfoot costume that was in this ice block that these jokers down in Georgia hoaxed Mr. Tom Biscardi into buying. So I recognized the nostrils right away. I said, this is this monkey suit, this Bigfoot costume. You can go online and buy it for like $600 or something. So I recognized it right away. I knew it was a hoax from there on out, but I had no idea how it was going to play out.
Yeah.
And sure enough, Tom Biscardi paid around $50,000 for this thing, and allegedly there's some lawsuit pending over it now. But it's really a strange story. It's quite a hoax, though. And it's one of the things, when you get into the realm of any kind of bizarre, strange, paranormal, you're going to have all kinds of fruitcakes out there to deal with.
I mean, and that just seems like almost all of these different fields, you know, you have these people that come up that are trying to make a quick buck, more or less. I mean, I know this group would, you know, charge people to take them onto expeditions into the, you know, into the woods, you know, looking for Bigfoot, and probably honestly didn't even know what the heck they were looking for. I mean, you know.
You're right. A lot of these expeditions, if you ask my personal opinion, I think they're glorified snipe hunts.
Yeah.
There we go.
And they charge you a flat fee. You go out and they might send somebody ahead once or twice to do some weird knocks or whistles or, you know, maybe send somebody out in a fursuit in the distance. I don't know. I can't say for certain. I've not been on any of them personally, but, you know, it, if you like going out, maybe looking for a Bigfoot and having fun just being out in God's nature, I mean, there's no problem with that whatsoever. But if you really think people are out there going to find something, I think it's a money-making venture, you said.
And speaking of the money-making venture, you know, you have on your site Bigfoot pop culture, which is, you know, I've been going through your site. The most intriguing to me was all the stuff that rose up just because of this one film. You know, like you said, it's one of the most analyzed films in, you know, in history. We have Harry and the Hendersons, which I remember from my childhood going to watch this movie. A lot of people out there probably do. Something that I'd never heard of before, and one of the most intriguing things I've ever heard. I've actually been looking for videos of this. The Bionic Bigfoot.
This is one of the greatest toys ever.
I want this toy. Can you explain exactly what the Bionic Bigfoot is? Jordan, you're going to like this.
Yeah, it's about 14 inches tall. It was made by Kenner as part of the line of the $6 Million Man and Bionic Woman toy series that they put out. And there was it was almost a mini series on both TV shows, actually. They had Andre the Giant playing Bigfoot. And Bigfoot was hot in the 70s. I mean, you couldn't go anywhere with seeing Bigfoot T-shirts, people, you know, toys with Bigfoot, TV shows about Bigfoot, documentaries, you know, it was all over the place after Patterson film occurred in late 67. It was basically the In Search Of series that really launched it in the early 70s. And then after that, it was all over the place. And it's a great toy. If you can, you know, they're going to run you about 80, 90 bucks on eBay without a box. So, and all it does is really nothing. You have the $6 million man, you punches him in the bread box and chest plate pops off to reveal that he's not just a Bigfoot, he's a bionic Bigfoot.
Bum, bum, bum. Sorry.
Exactly.
I mean,
it's so lame, it's cool.
Well, that's, I mean, and a lot of this stuff, this Bigfoot board game, I'm trying to figure out what the heck the Bigfoot board game is. It looks like this huge Bigfoot that's on the game and you try to run from him or something.
Yeah, I've never played that one personally. Yeah. I do remember it. They actually had a commercial for it back when. You know, just a little marching roll dice type of board game. I don't think it's anything anybody over the age of 8 would be too thrilled with, or unless you're really into Bigfoot. But it's another example of the Patterson film influencing our culture in a major pop culture way.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of movies that were out, you know, The Revenge of Bigfoot, Sasquatch, The Capture of Bigfoot. And then my favorite were all the Weekly World News stuff, you know, come out. I mean, it's pervasive mainly just because of this one film. I mean, before that, I'm guessing there was no, I mean, there was, but, you know, it was kind of not really the sensation that it was. Is that correct?
Correct. I mean, I show in my articles, historic Bigfoot articles, the only thing before Patterson film about Bigfoot were bizarre newspaper sightings that showed up in mainstream newspapers from the mid-1800s on up.
Uh-huh. Hey, Jeff, quick, let me interrupt. We got a phone call. We have Dave from Steubenville. How you doing, Dave?
Hey, gentlemen. Good evening. Hey, you know, I wanted to make a statement about Bigfoot because I don't think a whole lot of people understand really what, you know, the speculation is. Uh-huh. You know, the Sasquatch goes back 300-400 years in American Indian history. There was a fantastic show on History Channel the other evening that I watched, and it wasn't just about Bigfoot. It was about it's called Monsters. And I believe it was on the History Channel. Might have been on another one, but might have been on Nat Geo. But The story behind a lot of this is it's got a ton of history to it. And, you know, I think that, you know, people say, well, we've never found bones. We've never found the body. We've never found skulls. We never, all we find is footprints. But people also don't understand that. Look at the African elephant. The African elephant is so intelligent that they bury their own.
Really?
And there are, oh, absolutely.
I didn't know that.
Oh, absolutely. They will bury, the pride or the pod will take one of their elderly deceased, and they are very intelligent creatures, and they will literally carry this animal and bury it where other pachyderms have been buried for hundreds of years. And there's yet to be times when people that are studying these animals that have no idea where they bury these animals. So therefore, other than a traumatic death by a poacher or by, you know, infant disease or whatever the case may be, there's not a whole lot of pachyderm bodies and skeletons that are found on the continent of Africa. So the theory is, from what I've understood, and I've been reading about this for a long time, the theory from what I've understood is that, you know, this creature is so seclusive and reclusive, I should say,
yeah,
that when they pass, their own do the pretty much the same thing, because they're intelligent enough to realize that, you know, once a carcass is found or a body is found or whatever the case may be, that, you know, their discovery is imminent. And so if you study either cryptozoology or if you're just, you know, a
animal buff
person, yeah, an animal buff, which I am, there are a lot of species that do this. So it's not out of the realm of...
That's new to me. I never heard it.
Yeah, it's very, very interesting. I've read this for a long time. And, you know, we all have to agree that there are anomalies, you know, to take the form of creatures all over this planet. I mean, you know, they're just, let's put it this way. They just recently discovered, I believe it was a bat or something in Mexico that had been considered extinct for 90 years.
Really?
And they found it, yeah, and they found it flourishing now.
Wow.
So, I'm not saying that I have hard evidence that Sasquatch exists. But
you're taking away some doubt.
Well, it's almost as if, it kind of dovetails with, you know, the thought of UFOs. And even in the Bible, and even in Mayan scripture, the days of cave dwellers, that they had, you know, drawn pictures that were basically men coming in spaceships or creatures coming in spaceships. So, you know, we, as a logical human being, nobody can discount a lot of this stuff. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I didn't know that about the elephants, and you know, that's always something that's been kind of holding me back. And I told Jeff earlier that, you know, it was the hardest thing for me to believe, the Bigfoot thing. And you know, with you telling me that, it's easing up on me. I don't want to say that I'm 100% believer, but you're right. I mean, the Indians have talked about this way before, you know, we've Americanized the myths, you know, like the,
absolutely.
And you know, with them burying their own, I mean, the last we had, who told us that their bones dissolved in the earth because the ground was so acidic. And for me to believe that, I might as well, shoot myself. I don't know.
Well, no, you know, don't do that, because, and I'm not saying that Mr. Keating is incorrect, because if you watch on the History Channel,
Monster
Without
Quest?
Man or After Man,
Life After People. Yeah.
What would happen to this planet?
Uh-huh.
Should there not be human inhabitants? Maybe, you know, a disease, swine flu, whatever, wipes out the entire population of man. What actually happens on the planet? And you know, it's factual. It's oh my God, is it interesting? But you know, it's the same thing. I mean, the natural forces of the planet one day will shake humans off. I mean, it's just the way it happens. And if it's not coming from inside the planet or from within the planet, it will come as a natural disaster from the solar system.
Yeah.
As how the dinosaurs were probably destroyed. So, you know, it's for people to completely dismiss this is ridiculous. And I have a local story.
Okay.
If you drive up from Wheeling on Route 2,
okay,
before you get to the exit to Brook High School, there's a train bridge over there.
Okay.
Now, when the mill was flourishing there, guys would park their cars over there and they'd walk that train bridge to get over to the other side because it was just easier.
Okay.
there were reports of several individuals, mill workers, coming in to and fro from late night shifts that actually recognized the creature on the bridge that they thought it at first was a bear until they smelled the stench. They heard the unearthly screams. And a friend of my sister, and my sister is now 60 years old, had a house up in the hills behind there. And her children were playing out back one early evening. And they were in a treehouse that their father had built for them.
Uh-huh.
And they actually saw this creature and they heard it.
Now, really?
A personal experience of mine was, and I don't know that you guys are familiar with this, but the state forest out, I don't want to call it Jefferson or whatever it is. It's out past Wintersville and Bloomingdale, and it's up in the hills. A friend of mine and I had been in Myrtle Beach. This is when we were in high school. And we came back and we grabbed a couple 40s and got in my 4x4 and went out there and just decided we were going to sit there and have a couple beers and relax. And we heard the scream that I heard the other night on Nat Geo from supposedly that creature that was recorded that they say may have been a Sasquatch. And it was identical. I mean, and I'll tell you how bad it was. It scared us so bad, we threw out complete bottles of beer. I started my Bronco up and I drove 85 miles an hour down a gravel road to get out of there.
Now tell me this, did it smell? Because I've heard reports before, people always said that they smell. Jeff, is that right?
Well,
they do have a certain odor is the report. And Dave is right on a lot of things that he said about the Native Americans. If you go on my website, you can look at historic articles that go back to the mid-1800s with Indian tribes talking about they refer to them as their elders, an uh-huh. elder tribe, furry beings. And also, he's also correct on some of the new discoveries of animals that are being discovered all the time. Did you know that the gorilla was an unnamed and only known by rumor up until 1847?
Really?
Absolutely.
Wow. It's
a brand new creature, for all matter of fact, as far as people are concerned. And it used to just be described as a beast, a forest beast. Nobody believed it until somebody actually captured one or shot one in 1847. So the gorilla itself is a relatively new discovery.
Wow.
And if you recall, the original King Kong was written in the 1800s as a novel. And I wish I could remember the author, but I can't at this point. But that's why what your guest just said, gentlemen, is that it wasn't cryptozoology. It was an actual natural mammal on the planet, but there was no exposure to it because we didn't have TV and internet and all that other stuff. And how many people went to Africa at the time, or where they lived? And there's just been, listen, if somebody tells a lie over and over and over and over again, it turns into the truth. However, there has been too many sightings. Now, I'll leave you with this because I know that I'm sure there's other people that want to call. And on the show that I watched the other day on Nat Geo, one was of course, they do all the plaster cast and things of this nature, and I'm sure some of them have been faked.
Oh,
and
yeah.
If you watch the X-Files, they fake a monster by a lake, blah, blah, blah. But the story, they use experts, and they took these casts of this creature who had a metatarsal break in his midfoot. And so he walked incorrectly, and they actually took it to, I don't know what you would call maybe a podiatrist or a surgeon that actually works on human feet, and said there is absolutely no way this is any animal that we have ever seen, and it certainly isn't a human being.
Wow.
And so what they did is they reconstructed the film, which was supposedly on his deathbed. He said it was a fake. I don't believe that. But it was so amazing. They actually made heads that looked like the creature. They zoomed in because they had the technology now. The creature that was walking, and who was the author of that film in 66 or 62? What was his name?
Patterson.
Patterson, okay. They zoomed in on this picture. That animal, that creature, was a female. It actually had breasts. You could see it in the defined, reconstructed video. And it was amazing. And they did a study making these different heads and different heights of what they saw in that video. And the physicians and the doctors that were looking at it said there was absolutely no way that was a man in an ape suit or some type of a contrived thing, because
wow.
his gait was absolutely animalistic. It was certainly not anything that a human could possibly do. So, it's funny because, you know, everybody wants to see, you know, actual proof. But if you go to church every Sunday, some people do, some people don't. They still believe in Jesus Christ, and they still believe in God, and they've never seen him.
You're right.
So,
all right, thank you very much, Dave.
Thanks for your call,
welcome,
Dave.
Thanks.
Now, Jeff, what do you say with your research to the video? Did you get that was a female?
Yeah, absolutely. If you
really?
Look at it, absolutely, yeah. Look at it. Even on YouTube, you can see it on some of the cruddier versions. You see breasts at one point when the creature turns to its right over its shoulder.
Okay, yeah.
Some breasts. Now, if this was a hoax, why would you sew some breasts onto a costume? They don't make Bigfoot costumes, especially back in 67, or gorilla costumes.
With boobs?
With realistic-looking boobs, yes.
Now, I was thinking that it was just, like, a lot of hair, like, around its chest, you know, and, okay.
Yeah, you can, it's very plain to see. There's very few people who will deny that it actually has breasts on it, whether they believe it's fake or real. Just look at it a little closer, watch a couple different versions of the film, and you will surely see that this was a female creature or a female hoax suit. But once again, if you're going to do a hoax, there's no reason to put breasts on it.
Yeah.
And another thing is people don't realize it's not that easy. I mean, to if I gave you, $1,000 and you're an inexperienced in costume making or being a seamster, in a gorilla suit and said, you know, go ahead and make realistic looking breasts on this suit. I want it done in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I don't think you could do it.
Yeah.
Personally, I know I couldn't. And Roger Patterson had no costume background that anybody knew of.
And why would he want to? Like, if somebody was making a hoax, he'd be like, okay, we're going to go and do this, but first, we got to make it a lady.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. It doesn't make any sense. It's the path of least resistance. You don't need to do it.
Yeah.
You could easily just say it was a creature and not have breasts on it. That is one of the most intriguing things about this film.
And do you think, because we were talking before Dave called, all of these different, you know, pop culture, you know, constantly in front of us, most recent being the Don't Mess with Sasquatch, Jack Lynx commercial, which are very funny. Do you think that contributes, though, to people just not wanting to believe this? I mean, it's, makes it kind of silly, makes it kind of, who would believe that? When I just looked up, because he mentioned new creatures, that it says here, the Himalayan wilderness yields 350 new species, and that was the August 10th of this year. You know, 350 new ones. Why can't there be something else out there, you know, that's very good at hiding, very good at, you know, keeping away from society?
Absolutely.
Do you think it's...
Well, like you said, that bat's been in hiding for the last 90 years.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. There are a lot of creatures that are newly discovered. And here's another point. Think about this. What if this was one of the last remaining Bigfoot creatures that Patterson caught on film?
True.
Some people don't realize this thing might be extinct now. We don't know.
But who would have buried that one?
Well, heck, you go out in the woods, you're not going to find dead bears out there.
Yeah,
that's one of the things. If you're a hunter, I live out in the woods, northern part of the country. I mean, I see bears, you know, on several occasions. You never come across a dead one. They just tend to die, go somewhere and die, and they deteriorate rapidly. The other animals get them, and they just go right into the ground within a very short period of time.
And that's what Don Keating said, that the ground was so acidic that just like it bears, it eats the bears away.
Yeah, it's a very short period of time. So if you're on a remote wilderness, which was where Roger Patterson and Bob Gimlin were in 1967, very remote wilderness, that's not something where it gets a lot of foot traffic. I mean, that could have been one of the last Bigfoot creatures shot. We don't know. A lot of the ones we see between now and then, I mean, are really not worth talking about. A lot of them have been discovered as hoax or people thrown into the ash heap, but who knows, who cares?
Yeah.
Done on a cell phone camera or a cheap digital video camera or VHS tape, and, you can't analyze it very much. It could be real, but the footage itself isn't good enough that people take much time in analyzing because they can't.
Well, Jeff, our time is up. But I want to leave you with this. Coming in, I was very skeptical, and you couldn't tell me anything else, and you told me something else. I'm not going to say I believe, but I'm not going to tell you that I don't either. Okay?
I like that. Healthy skepticism. That's great.
We'll bring you back
on. God bless
you
and your listeners, and thanks for having me on.
I think we'll have you back on sometime to push me over that line. Try to get me over that 50% line.
So where are you at? He's at 80% on the film. Where are you at? Give me a percentage.
I can't throw a percent. I can't throw a percent yet, but
I want a percentage before the end of the day.
Before the end of the show, I'll give a percentage, but my brain's got to settle on it a little bit.
Okay.
Jeff, thank you very much for joining us. You can check out Jeff from our website. We have it all linked up, whispersradio.com. You'll be able to go.
His is pattersonfilm.com.
There we go.
Pattersonfilm.com.
Jeff, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. It's been a pleasure. God bless you and your listeners, and have a good week.
You too, sir.
You too, sir.
Bye-bye.
Well, Biffy, it's your turn. What do you think? Where do you stand? You were quiet. You're too quiet.
You need to talk to us. We're not scared.
No, I was just listening to Jeff and Dave explain, and I don't know. I'm still...
You're Jordan?
I'm still on the fence on this. I can't put a percentage on it yet, so... Maybe by the end of the show, I'll have a percentage as well, so we'll see.
Yeah, because it's crazy, you know, because you always think, okay, this is what we're going to base it on is this movie. We're going to base it on this movie that was made in the 60s. It's all grainy. It's not defined. Okay, here we go. But
which, I mean, like you said, you know, there are some good ones out there.
I
know Monster Quest has, whenever they do a Bigfoot one, they always show this. It's a lot clearer, and I would recommend if anybody gets a chance to watch that next time they have a Bigfoot one.
But take away the quote-unquote proof that we have so far, the video, the castings of footprints, the gigantic jawbones or whatever, you know, that we find. Think about the Indian. See, that's where, because you get to the Indians and you say, okay, well, the Native American culture has this and the aliens found it. I don't know, you know, you never know.
Well, I think last time, we talked about the Georgia hoax. I mean, that's the thing that ruined it for me. I was really ready to, you know, be able to convince me. Then they did that.
Yeah.
I mean, and it was so, we were sitting here looking, I felt bad for Mr. Don Keating that, you know, joined us, because all, I think me, Lola, and we all three were just like, we're looking at it as like, it's a freaking rubber suit.
Yeah, okay, well,
I know.
I said that I would shoot myself, and I'm sorry for saying that. I shouldn't have. It's 7 o'clock. It's time for CNN News. We'll be right back. You're listening to AM 1600 WKKX, Whispers Radio, and UPRN, the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Hour 2 of Whispers. It is 7.07 p.m. Still 70 degrees-ish. I don't know. I didn't really check.
71.
I'm
going
to go ahead and read this again. Once again, it's time for the annual Ohio County Relay for Life. Join WKKX and our team, the Kellis Crazies, as we honor our beloved friend George Kellis and help raise money for a charity that was dear to his heart. Stop down today, Tuesday, August 11th, and make a donation and sign the WKKX banner to honor George. All proceeds will go to the Ohio County Relay for Life. Let's make George proud. We still got time for that. Kelly's still out there waiting.
There's Darth Vader's running around out there.
Yep.
I had to go to the restroom. It was scary. He chased me. What are you laughing for?
Give us a call, 304-214-1600. If you're out of the area, call us 1-866-514-1600. I want to say that most of you know, before each show, I have to have some chocolate milk. And I brought my chocolate milk. And I don't know if it was sitting in a warm cooler, I guess, when I bought it, but I took a drink. It tastes horrible, and it smells not very pretty. It hasn't expired as per the date on it, but the smell would make you think less, and my stomach's churning right now like crazy.
You look like yellow.
Ugh.
You going okay?
I'll be all right. I'll be cool. Right,
we'll get you out of there.
I got Biff here to cover me.
If he drops, you're in.
I'm ready.
All right.
We did get some emails. We want to read some emails. I got one. Nikki's got one. Mine is a man from, his name is Renier. It says, "Hi, I'm a listener from Austria, Europe, and I think your shows are just awesome. I especially like the guest Tim Schwartz." Tim, if you remember a few weeks ago, knew
we talked about
a lot about everything.
Yeah, we talked about time travel. We talked about Hollow Earth theory.
JFK assassination.
JFK. We talked about everything. It was crazy.
It says, "I would appreciate his return. He has so much interesting topics to talk about, and his knowledge is overwhelming. Besides, he seems to be a very nice guy," in which he very much was. "I hope you continue
your very good work, Rainier. So thank you, Rainier, from Austria.
Yeah, I'll try to have Tim back on before the end of the year, so I can promise that. Next email, or the last email we'll read today, we got a couple, but this one's from Jessica. It says, hello, I definitely enjoyed the show dated 8/4/2009, which was last week, with the topics 2012 and John Teeter. These are two of my favorite topics, and even though Larry freaked me out, it was still a funny show. She's talking about Larry. I totally forgot the last name. Larry's the one that talked about 2012, so we're talking about kind of the end of the year, end of the world. So, you know, I was freaked out as well. Unfortunately, I was listening to the show late at night in bed while trying to fall asleep, and needless to say, my dreams are very strange. Thank you for the brain stimulation. Even though I'm dragging a day at work due to strange dreams and lack of sleep, I'm so glad I found this podcast, and I wish I could listen live. I definitely would if I lived in West Virginia. And regards, Jessica. So,
what's funny is that is the only time anybody has ever said, Nick, thank you for stimulating my brain. So I think everybody out in radio land needs to give Nikki an applause.
She said, oh,
I wasn't there. You were the stimulating
one. Look
what
I did.
It didn't say, I now feel dumber. See, if that would have happened, it would have been me.
We don't read those emails.
Well, we don't read them on the air. Cry about them later.
Curled up in bed. All right,
Nikki, you want to introduce today's guest too?
Guest number two, Justin Blair, the documentary maker. While traveling through Transylvania, he interviewed native
villagers.
The villagers, yes, living in Transylvania, about their experiences with the paranormal. DVD or his documentary is called Across the Forest.
And it's subtitled, so if you can't read, I'm sorry. You'll have to have a friend there to read it to you.
Unless you're Romanian. Unless you can listen to Romanian. Justin, are you with us?
I'm right here. How y'all doing?
Justin, we watched your documentary. We loved it. We loved the stories. There were times you can tell they were old people talking because they'd start to ramble about a bunch of stuff. But, I mean, all in all, I thought it was very interesting. Nick and I rewound some of the parts several times just to watch it over and be like, wow, look at that.
Yeah, there was some story. I mean, it was just intriguing. It had to have been a wonderful experience. I mean, how exactly did you get to this point? You know, where did this idea come from to go to Romania?
Transylvania,
and do this.
Well, I think the name Transylvania always, you know, seemed kind of mysterious to me. As a kid, I didn't even really know that Transylvania was a real place. I kind of assumed it was a made-up place where Dracula lived. As I got older, I was in college, University of Florida, and I went in an archaeological expedition in Romania, in northwest Romania, Satu Mare. That's the first time I got introduced to the people and the culture and the place, and really kind of fell in love with the place and decided to go back and try to document some of these stories about vampires, werewolves, forest spirits, kind of strange UFO phenomenon. Preserve those stories before they left us for good.
Yeah, there was two of you that went, Justin, of course, you, and then Matthew Vincent.
That's right,
now,
yeah.
Do both of you speak Romanian?
No, not at all.
Not at all? Okay.
So it was a tough trip.
Not at all. I started studying it, I think, in 2005. It's a fairly difficult language, somewhat similar to – it's a Romance language, so it's similar to French and Spanish, but it's right in the middle of surrounded by Slavic countries and the Hungarians, so there's a lot of weird influences in the language. I can read it fairly well now. I can speak it a little bit, but I'm still working on it. So.
And like Jordan has said before, you know, there was in subtitles. I'm actually glad at the beginning. I'm thinking, well, they could have maybe did a voiceover. You know, by the end, I'm thinking if you had done a voiceover, it would have just ruined it because the language itself added so much. I mean,
it's very true.
I mean, because the story you could tell sometimes, you know, sometimes they'd be laughing a little bit, but sometimes you could just tell that there was something that, I mean, you could tell that in the voice and the way they were talking, their gestures, that they really do believe. They're not just telling it, you know, just to be telling the stories, that they do believe it, that this happened, that this was something that scares them.
Well, that was important to us to go there and to actually, you know, get stories from people who had experiences with these kinds of things. I didn't and still don't make any judgment call on whether or not subjectively true or anything, but we filmed over 40 hours of footage, and we made sure that the stories in the film are stories where the people actually believe to them and, you know, could speak about them from firsthand experience. And I think that makes it a lot more interesting.
Now, three different creatures that they spoke about. I know one of them was the, and I cannot remember how to
the
say
the vampire
name.
One.
The Sergoy was the first one that they were talking about. I was trying to think of the lady. She comes to people at night. The young men
has the cloven hooves.
Cloven
hooves. Padori, I imagine.
What's that? I'm sorry.
Mama Padori.
Oh, that's it. Yes.
Or Fata Padori.
Yeah.
Types of forest spirits.
Yeah, the forest spirits. That's one of the ones that you rewound. You know, this guy's talking about, you know, being out in the forest, and all of a sudden, you know, this woman appears, and he, you know, he's kind of laughing a little bit, but it was kind of this nervous laughter, kind of, you know. You know, and he's kind of having a little bit of fun with it, but at the same time, you can kind of tell, maybe this, you know, this actually maybe happened, you know.
That's right. That story, the context of that, he was a shepherd, actually, and he'd spent, he was fairly old at the time we interviewed him. He spent pretty much all his life up in the hills, being out in the kind of wilderness, and we were all sitting around this big kind of their version of a family room, and there was, you know, two or three families there, and everyone was sharing stories, and he was laughing, I think, from a combination of a little bit of palinka, which is Romanian moonshine, and a little bit of fear. And also, when they're telling those stories, you know, there's always going to be some people who are saying, oh, you know, well, I don't believe that. But he definitely he had some sort of experience up there in the hills. And, you know, it's for the viewer to decide on.
Well, sure. And you make no judgment on that. You just pretty much just tell the stories. Or not, you don't even tell, you just allow them to tell the story, and that's it.
Well, that's, you know, because I felt like I had seen so many, you know, I had never actually seen a film set in Transylvania, which is where so many people think of as the origin of a lot of the supernatural, you know, beliefs, which isn't exactly accurate. But I actually wanted to make something where the people spoke, as opposed to here's a narrator telling you what to believe. I just wanted to hear, you know, the people of Transylvania tell their stories. And
now, how hard was this to get them to actually open up to you? I mean, did you have any trouble with that, or were they really willing to?
Let me piggyback on that.
Piggyback, okay.
Okay,
go ahead.
Not only how hard was it to get them to open up, but at the beginning, towards the beginning, you had the old woman telling how she had the dead, you know, her friend had died, and she dug up, or before the corpse was buried, she made everybody leave, and she stabbed it through the heart because she thought it was eating all of her animals. I mean, how did you get her to open up with that?
Oh, when I heard that story, that was a
great one.
it was really strange, because here's this nice little old lady, you know, she makes this kind of apple pie. We sit down, she's got like a dozen cats all around her.
She starts
telling the story, and my translators are next to me. I can tell we're getting a good story, but I didn't understand it fully until after the interview. And he says, yeah, this lady, you know, stabbed a corpse through the heart, and it started screaming and blood coming out of its mouth. And I thought, oh, wow.
And she keeps saying that she was a lot braver then. And I was,
yeah, she was like, I was way braver then. It's like,
were.
Apparently.
She was a great lady. It wasn't very difficult to get people to speak. I think they really, the older generation especially, grew up under communism. They had no chance to, you know, to speak about what they believe. There was a lot of government oppression in all kinds of ways, but especially speech. We literally would walk down village, you know, little dirt roads, hitchhike, take, you know, whatever means of transportation, and just knock on people's doors or go to the little village square or the village pub and ask people who in the village knows these stories, who in the village do you think would want to speak to us, and we just go knock on their door And everybody was, the Romanian people were extremely friendly. And, you know, the main, so at some points it was more difficult just to, you know, there were some people who would talk for 2 or 3 hours. So wow. Going back over there and trying to get, you know, translate that all and take the story out that we needed for the film, that was probably more difficult than actually getting people to speak. The only other issue with it was a lot of the, you know, we talked to some anthropologists, some folklorists over there to give us an idea of who to speak to. We went through villages and we would, you know, ask for, say, Pope Maria or something, some name. Mm-hmm. We would find that house and someone would say, well, she passed away last week. Or we had this weird, you know, spat of kind of ill luck where we were going through a couple of villages and everybody had died just like the day before the week before. And that kind of seemed mildly strange, but, you know, that was, you know, the lady on the cover of our DVD, she literally told us, she said, you know, you're filming me. This is my deathbed. These are the last stories I'm going to be able to tell.
Wow. And, Which we were going to ask you about that cover. I mean, because the cover itself is, and I don't have it with me.
The cover. Because it's such, it looks like this big historical picture. I mean, you know it's back in a village. You know that it's, you know that you're there. You know, you get this little old lady, this, you know, picture of this, like, is it a Catholic, like...
Well, the Eastern Saint, Orthodox, it looks like, yeah.
And then, like, kind of in the background, you see a boombox. Like, a newer, modern boombox. And I'm like, I didn't even see that when I first looked. But look at that, you know? I just thought that was crazy.
Well, we wanted to have, you know, kind of a theme of the movie is that a lot of technology, a lot of modern ways are seeping into these areas, and that's causing, it's good in a lot of ways for the people and their quality of life, but when that happens, a lot of the you know, the folklore, the old stories, the old beliefs get lost, and so the younger generation doesn't necessarily believe in these things as much, and so it was interesting to me to have this lady, you know, that icon she's holding up, was 300 years old, and she had her family for generation after generation. And then right next to her, she has a little boombox.
Now, who is this icon of? Is that St. Nicholas, or?
I believe that was, yep.
See, Nick's throwing that out there because it's his name. We did have a caller, has an offline question. It says, ask Justin what story creeped you out the most?
I have to think about that for a moment. Well, certainly hearing that the little old lady had actually stabbed a corpse to the heart
did
it for me.
Yeah.
I think a lot of these stories, there was one about a lady who had, it wasn't really a very sinister story. It wasn't, you know, it was a strigoi, but it was kind of a kinder strigoi in a way. But it was a mother who had died, and every night she would braid her children's hair. And in the morning, the father would say, his daughters have their hair braided? How did your hair get braided? Because they were very young and they wouldn't be able to do it themselves.
Yeah.
And they would say, well, mom came last night and braided her hair. And so the father goes to the church to ask the priest what to do. And then the mother appears in the church and the priest says some sort of incantation or whatever. And the mother burst into flames and is sent back to the other world, I suppose. But that one, in a way, creeped me out more than any of the others because, it's so different from what we think of as vampires. This was the Strigoi is very much related to the vampire in a lot of ways, but here was someone coming back from the dead, not, you know, trying to harm anything, but still the natural order of things were, you know, wrong. And I think that one probably, in a way, scared me the most.
Yeah.
I mean, and that was something when we were going through it, you know, I looked at the definition of Strigoi was vampire, and so when they first started talking about it, I'm thinking, well, this sounds more like just a ghost, and it was kind of hard to kind of, you know, get your mind around it first, because we're coming at it from our understanding of the terms rather than what theirs is. Then you just kind of let them have it and just start listening to them.
It's a complicated thing that... The link there is that goes back to literature where Bram Stoker, the author of Dracula, he never actually went to Transylvania, which at that point anyway was Hungarian and not Romanian. But he sat in a library in London and basically took and read folklore, kind of a lot of the stories, the same stories that I was collecting. these beliefs, but he was actually just, and he never went to the area. And he blended that folklore with the historical character of Vlad Țepeș, who was this medieval Romanian royalty who was pretty sinister. He was pretty violent, but in a way the Romanians actually still respect him a great deal. He blended that historical character with that folklore and then came up with the character of Dracula. And Dracula really, even though the notion of the vampire has been around, even in literature, predates Bram Stoker's work, that's kind of where we get the idea of a vampire is from Dracula. That's the big, you know, the big book on it. So the Strigoi, you're right, it does seem a lot like a ghost, but then there, that characteristic of, you know, the stake through the heart is a way of dispelling it or killing it.
Yeah.
Drawing away energy or blood from the victim. I mean, that's something we all think of, you know, associate with the vampire. So it's a kind of complicated issue, you know, but the Strigoi, it's similar to a vampire, but similar to a ghost in some way.
And the ghost, because the first person in that story, the first person that saw this, you know, entity, you know, they actually saw her. And then the second one, the lady that did do the stabbing, she didn't see them, you know, and she's just seeing the effect of this, of the entity there, you know, on her horses and her animals.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
That's where I'm still trying to wrap my mind around it. Cause it's like, now wait a second here, let's go back, you know? And it was an intriguing tale. I mean, it was very, I don't know. It left me kind of speechless. You know, we're kind of doing that nervous laughter kind of thing, sitting there watching it, like, okay, she did what now?
So. Well, it's strange because, I mean, you know, it's a cultural thing in a way. I mean, while that behavior isn't even acceptable there, to go, you know, stab a corpse to the heart, I want to make it clear, it's not like Transylvania. While it is still not as developed as the West, it's not like everyone there believes, you know, runs around with stakes trying to kill vampires.
Sure. I would.
But in a way, an activity like that is still kind of more culturally sanctioned. Like, if you did that here in America, you would just be considered completely insane.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, if you do that there in a certain context and enough people believe that that's going on, you can get away with that. And it seems like, you know, it's almost a heroic thing to do, to, you know, you have to get rid of this entity that's, you know, haunting the village and killing animals. And
it's more understandable, yeah.
Sure.
Which we had two of the stories that stuck with, at least with me, I'm sure Jordan will probably mention them, that you can almost see kind of the, maybe the blending, especially the first one. It was the horses, Saint...
Water.
Okay, yeah, Saint Fa. And the story was, you know, I'm listening to it and I'm thinking, I don't exactly see, you know, I can see this as, you know, these guys maybe abuse these women or something. Do you see what I'm saying?
Exactly. Yeah, that is a bizarre story. It didn't exactly fit in with a lot of the other ones, but I thought it was so bizarre that it needed to be in the film.
Can you kind of recant that, recant that a little bit and just...
Sure.
Recant that. I have no idea. I'm sorry.
I can't deny it, but I'll do my best to explain it. I think you had it right. It, in a way, it's kind of a warning, because the idea is unmarried women aren't supposed to be outside of their household past midnight, you know, and this is a belief, and it's not a belief that still persists greatly, but it does somewhat. And the idea is that if you are, then you might go to the dance with the horses of Saint Water, which there's some sexual connotation there underneath that. But these half-men, half-horse creatures will take you away, and you'll start dancing this, you know, dance, and you'll dance kind of into a frenzy, and then you'll die, is the idea. Well, I mean, okay, you can take it at its face value, but
sure.
You can look at it in a different meaning. It's something that, you know, villagers tell their daughters to make them come home, you know, early so that they're not out at night and perhaps getting, you know, kidnapped or hurt or whatever. And so the stories work on a lot of different levels. You know, that story is more of a kind of a warning, I guess, or you know, an instructional story. It's a bizarre story, though.
It is a bizarre. And I was thinking when she was talking about it, you know, she's talking about, well, no, they weren't exactly horses. They were guys with horses' faces, you know. And I'm thinking, you know, if you removed everything, I'm thinking, these women got raped. and they're using maybe a story to back it up, or, you know, and I could see my mind going through. Of course, I'm a little jaded.
It's like saying the if you're up late, the boogeyman's going to get you, and then when something happens, like, see, I told you, the boogeyman got him. You know, it was way out there.
Exactly.
And it was a strange story. I think that's another one to be rewound.
There was also one about, and my brain, I thought UFOs, because it was the farmers out there, they were cutting timber, and they weren't allowed to, and all of a sudden they saw these bright lights, and they saw what looked like a cloud floating over top of them, and then they got confused and lost, and the cloud, you know, that didn't look like a cloud, followed them home. You know, I thought, wow, this is
as big as a house.
They got abducted, or
exactly.
This is like a UFO story, and they're like, look at that cloud.
You know, it's interesting, because when we heard that, it brought up this idea that the idea, you know, the concept of UFOs and abduction, I think, is a worldwide phenomenon. But when you live without, if you live in a context where you can't, you don't have the vocabulary to explain it, you know, we were talking to that guy off camera, and he wanted to talk about jet airplanes. He was kind of amazed that airplanes had jet engines at this point, right?
Wow.
So for him, if he were out in the forest and were to see something that would, you know, be described by someone in this country in terms of technology, you know, a UFO, a flying saucer, the only words he has to describe it is a floating cloud.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which goes back to, you know, even go to the Bible, ancient times, and a lot of people point to, is it Ezekiel?
Elijah, I think.
Elijah, yeah. Elijah and
Nick
the,
doesn't read.
The wills. Wow. But, you know, the wills, you know, wills turning inside of wills, and that's how they explained it, but a lot of people say, well, no, that's a UFO, and
the chariots of fire.
Yeah, the chariots of fire kind of thing. And so it was an interesting story.
Well, it's an excellent point. And, you know, what was strange about that is I was in the city after I had gotten that story and inclusion of Polka, and that's a more cosmopolitan city. It's a university town, a lot of younger people. I was at a bar talking to a lady about what we were doing, and she said, oh, you know, all of that, none of that's real, Strigoi, Vokalaj, Mopador, none of that's real. That's just the villagers believing that. And then she turns around in the same breath, and she says, but if you want real stories about supernatural, all you have to do is go to the hills right outside of the city, and UFOs, you know, come to this particular forest, and they abduct people. And I said, well, look, you're telling me the exact same story. You're just using different language to explain it because you're a university-educated person, you know. So I really think it just depends on where you grow up, you know, and what kind of vocabulary you have to describe these experiences. But mm-hmm. I have a feeling, a hunch, that these experiences, you know, have gone on throughout the beginning of time and all around the world. So I hope it gives people, you know, if they get a chance to look at the movie, to see that the supernatural isn't just in America. You know, it's not just in this spot. It's pretty much everywhere.
I mean, and our basis of the supernatural at this point gets to where we're doing the investigations, and we're using technology, and we're, you know, we're trying our best, you know, to open this up. Whereas these people are almost kind of the point where they're experiencing them, and they're passing them in stories. In fact, one of the guys that was talking, he's talking about how, you know, the TV makes you a blockhead, or you're stupider than as stupid as a bag of rocks, and how you know, unless you're talking with people, you're not, you're not formulating new ideas. And he nailed it. I mean, he really did. I mean,
he did, didn't he? I mean, he really does. And it's the same guy that was, you know, fascinated about the fact that jet engines exist.
Uh-huh.
So
yeah,
you can get knowledge and wisdom from people who aren't necessarily, you know, understand advanced ways or whatever we consider advanced or, you know, modern. I wanted to put that in the film because that's, you know, you go out into the villages now, especially after the fall of communism. You know, under communism, Romania had, I think, one television channel, and it was on for like 6 hours, and it was mainly just the dictator talking and parades and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, television has spread out and gotten out into the countryside. And, you know, once again, maybe it improves the quality of life for some people. I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of television. But what it does do is you would go into these villages and you would see the young people, and they're watching American Idol on satellite television, you know?
Yeah.
The old people over there weaving, you know, folk crafts and stuff like that. And you can see now there's this division. People aren't, you know, that the gentleman who told us that story, they didn't have television. So at nighttime, they would, you know, light candles, sit in the drawing room and talk about their day, or they would talk about the, you know, the folk tales they knew or their experiences or something that happened. Now people are a little more fragmented. They, you know, watch American Idol. So.
Well, now, you know, you mentioned, you know, they were coming up in communism. Did you get any stories about how conditions were under the communist? I mean, I know you just mentioned the one TV channel.
But, oh, yeah, we did. That was something that would happen a lot. We would get stories about the supernatural, and then that would just drift into, you know, life under communism. And at one point, we were thinking, wow, we've got so much footage, you know, we could make two films here. It's something, once again, people wanted to talk about it. They wanted to talk. They wanted to speak and have a chance to be on camera and to have their stories get out, whether it was about, you know, their fights with supernatural creatures or their fight with, you know, struggle with the government.
Now, that was under Nikolai Cuscu, is that correct?
Ceausescu.
Yeah, Ceausescu. Okay, I was never good at saying that name. Yeah. And which, I mean, a brutal, brutal dictator.
I guess he does read.
I'm a history major. What do you... Jeez. So, and that to me is also intriguing. I'm sorry. We'll stop from going that way.
Oh, no, it's an interesting subject. And, it somewhat plays into the film. For instance, the guy who was out there cutting timber, he's when he gets abducted by the UFO, he's already in a stressful spot because, you know, if you illegally cut timber now, you're going to get fined maybe or a slap on the wrist or whatever. But if you do things back then, the authorities come down on you a lot harder. So, you know, the political situation when a lot of these stories were happening, it does play into the actual, you know, experiences those people probably had.
And they were trying to avoid the police. I totally forgot about that.
Yeah.
And that does make sense. Okay. And see, I knew what I was doing. So he makes fun of me all the time. I'm sorry. Going back to what I was saying there, another cultural aspect was the funerals. And they talked about two different funerals for a young girl, a young boy and a young girl that were not married,
right.
Which was another, to me, that was a creepy part.
Wedding of the dead.
The wedding of the dead.
They fake the wedding, or they have a pretend wedding, you know, there with the dead body.
Yeah, that's largely up in Maramureș, which is northern Transylvania near the Ukrainian border. It's a strange rite. There's a professor who wrote an entire book on it called Gail Kligman, and if anybody's interested in that particular thing, they can check that out. She spent a long time in a village we visited called Yehud. The idea is this, that, you know, village life is very, very structured. So there is a linear way that a life is supposed to move. You're supposed to be born. You're supposed to be christened, baptized. You're supposed to grow up, go through adolescence, get married, get old, well, have kids, preferably before you get old, and then die. You know, and that's how life goes, and that's pretty much it. I mean, there's not a lot of it's not the world we live in where there's a lot of different options and there's a lot of travel. Most of the people we talked to hadn't gone 10 miles away from where we were interviewing their entire life. You know, you're talking about a place with dirt roads and bad roads and, you know, then there's just no reason to leave. So life is very structured there. When something happens, when a young person dies before they go through that pattern of life, then the natural order is disrupted. And the concern is then that young person who's died will come back and haunt the villagers because they didn't go through the pattern of their life they were supposed to. So what they do, and we never actually witnessed this, I would have loved to.
That's what I was going to ask, if you actually witnessed, which would have been sad, but yeah.
It would have been. There was always that question of how do you, you don't want to offend people by just shoving a camera in somebody's face, you know.
Bring the camera to the funeral, that would have been
Which surprisingly, you know, I actually met an anthropologist who did that, and people were all right with it. They look at death a little bit differently than we do, but this ceremony doesn't occur as much. A lot of these different rites and different beliefs, they don't occur as much anymore. Mm-hmm. The idea is, and there's all kinds of variations on it, but essentially you have a wedding. If it's a young man who's died, then you have a bride who's a living bride, and they go through a kind of mock wedding with
a dead body.
With the dead body, and then that.
Well,
somehow,
who selects this person first off? Does the boy's family select this young lady, or?
You know, I think it's done by consensus. I think it's done differently in every village. A lot of these rituals, you know, you can go 10 miles down the road, and they're telling you a different story about a strigoi or about the wedding of the dead, because once again, up, especially in the mountains, everything is so closed that things don't spread very easily. But someone is selected, and it does not, if it's a young lady, she's allowed, it's not like she's actually married. Okay. In other words, they go through the ceremony, and then after the body is buried, reburied, the young lady is not.
Did you say reburied?
Right.
Back up.
Well, I think the majority.
So they dig them back up, stab them through the heart, marry them, and then.
Once again, a lot of variations on this, because you could have a situation where it seems like you bury someone and you didn't go through a particular rite, whether it's the wedding of the dead or whether it's, you know, it's not like all corpses are thought of as being strigoi and every corpse is, you know. They put a stake through its heart or something. But if you bury someone, and this happens, actually, it's one of the reasons I got interested in this. I read a news article about this happening. You know, they bury it, and then strange things start happening. And it's unexplained. Well, they don't necessarily look all the time to a scientific explanation. Automatically, it becomes, oh, well, there's a strigoi about, or there's some kind of supernatural entity. Then you got to pick some brave guys or ladies to go out there and get the body out and whatever rite it is that they have to do to dispel them. And it varies a lot of different ways that has to be done. So I didn't hear any stories of the wedding of the dead where the corpse was actually buried first and then brought back up. But with all these stories, you know, there's some sort of disturbance, and then, of course, the person who's blamed is the person who just died, especially if they were thought of as having magical powers beforehand.
Yeah.
There's a strigoi V and a strigoi mort. So there's a living strigoi and a dead strigoi. The dead strigoi is kind of what we think of as, you know, the corpse, and then it comes back, and kind of a vampire-like.
Like the more, okay.
A living strigoi, actually, is not always necessarily feared. It's something akin to kind of not exactly a witch doctor. That doesn't sound right.
Is this a rare practice?
Now, yes.
Okay.
As well, it's hard to tell because.
I guess in different villages.
Yeah, it's difficult to tell because, see, in 2000, I think it was 4 or 5, this happened. They went out and it was in near Kuryachuk, I think. They dug up a body. They cut the heart out with a sigh. They burnt the heart, drank the ashes as a remedy against the strigoi, right? Well, this is then what happened was one of the niece of this person who had died and the corpse had been defiled, she came back and she was angry about it. She was the person who didn't believe in this. She was a city person. She calls the police. The police come and they actually arrest these people who did this. That was kind of a first. See, a lot of the times before that, things had just kind of been understood or taken care of within the village. It was understood that it's not lawful, but it was still done. So you're not always going to get people who are going to tell you the whole story, you know? I mean, especially now when things have changed, they're not going to say, yeah, the story with the lady in the beginning of the film, she was telling a story that had happened 40 years ago or something like that. But so you can't always tell. I mean, it's difficult to tell how frequently these things still occur.
Okay. Moving, I guess, to, I'm going to try to say this correctly, the Varkolaki. Am I saying that right?
Verkolach.
There you go. I'm trying.
It's a hard language.
The thing is, it was... Like, I could tell some of the words when we were going through, you know, like they'd say Luna, you know, and of course that's the moon.
Right.
That's really the only one I would recognize, but it was, you know, you can tell it's, like you said, the romance language.
Mm-hmm.
What was your favorite werewolf story? Because we're getting close to the end of the, the end of the night.
Sure.
What's the best one that stuck out in your mind?
Well, the strange thing about the werewolf stories, you had the Preacher Leech and the Verkalach, and some variations of that. They're not as, you know, they're not exactly frightening characters like we think of werewolves, you know, these really aggressive, you know, the beasts that are, you know, come and kill people. In a way, they were kind of, a lot of the stories were kind of sad or pathetic. It was people who had been cursed, and they had to roam around at night in the form of a dog or a wolf. And they would roam around, and they would make noise, and they would bark, but they weren't exactly...
they're not our Hollywood, stories.
Exactly, yeah. They were just people who had been cursed, and then some, at some point they would, the curse would be lifted, and they would... I guess one of the funniest aspects of... Well, I kind of think it's humorous. One of the funniest aspects of the whole thing is one of the ways you're supposed to be turned into this is to be the seventh son born in flowers. That's the phrase. And what that means is you're the seventh bastard son.
Oh, geez.
And if you're unlucky enough to be the seventh bastard son, then you're very likely to be turned into this wolf creature and have to run around. At the same time, the movie begins with and ends with the story, which I don't want to give away too much.
Sure.
But of a wolf that is not, no one knew that no one would define it. It was Strigor or Vukovac, but a wolf that definitely was not a nice wolf. And I think, you know the story because you saw the film.
Yeah, tore up some people.
That's a much more violent aspect of the idea. So.
And we're trying to, I've realized. Which
we're
is
giving
why,
away most of the
giving,
movie.
Yeah, and that's why I'm kind of stepping away a little bit, like, maybe we should stop. no matter what, you need to get, we can't do it justice. That's the problem. Just hearing them tell the story, looking up, and the thing guy caught me, really colorful, very ornate stuff around them most of the time. I'm looking through your pictures now on your website. If you go to crosstheforest.com, and it says stories at the bottom. If you go through here, I mean, there's some beautiful pictures, like the cross, the cross with Jesus painted onto it, and then I think the next one, next picture, well, one of the pictures coming up, this woman reading, I'm not sure what the pamphlet is. I mean, it's just very colorful scenes, very colorful life that they have there.
Sure. I mean, if you're interested in Eastern Europe, if you're interested in the supernatural or vampires in particular, this is the only movie that I know about that... The only one I know about. Perhaps there are some other ones out there. Vampires are very popular right now. This is actually going to Transylvania and getting the stories, from the people who believe in these things. And there's a lot of it's a different world. I mean, it's similar to ours, but as you can see from the website, people still hold on to older thoughts, older values, older beliefs. And I think there's, while I don't ascribe to them all, there's something to be learned from, checking into that world that's really kind of very different from ours.
Yeah, and we were actually talking with one of the young people out in the our lobby here before, and we mentioned vampires. She's like, vampires is like not Edward. I had to throw that out there. You're like, So, but I think they're cooler than Edward. So, and hopefully somebody out there know what
is
I'm talking about.
Is that the Twilight
about.
Guy?
Yeah, he's a Twilight guy. Yeah,
the kind of vampires that sparkle, and go to high school.
I haven't watched that yet, so.
Yeah, you're not missing
it. Yeah, because, we won't go there.
For the queen.
Now, where can we get your DVD? I'm sure we got hundreds of people out there saying, oh my God, I have to have it right now. How do we get that to you?
Check out the website, acrosstheforest.com. And there's a link there that says buy the DVD, and that's where we're distributing it from right now.
And how much does that DVD cost?
$9.99, I think, if you order it over the internet, which is the way most people would have to unless they live in rural northern Texas, and they'd like me to hand deliver them a copy. It's $9.99 plus shipping and handling. I think it ends up being $14.80 or something like that.
That's a steal for the DVD. I mean, I'm probably going to watch it again.
It's close to an hour and 20 minutes.
80 minutes, sure, yeah.
It's fun. It's worth it. Everybody get out there.
Any plans for another DVD or documentary?
Well, we're going to see how this one goes. It's such a lot of work trying to make a film on your own. And it's, you know, anyone's interested in doing it, I will say it's very possible now with the technology. And good cameras are pretty cheap these days. You know, lavalier mics are cheap. If anybody's interested in doing it, it's not impossible now, you know, with the technology, yeah, with editing programs on computers.
How long did this take you to make? I mean, from the beginning of the idea to now you're selling it.
Well, we went out to make our first documentary, and we kind of made it as hard as possible on ourselves. We made it in a foreign country, which required a lot of translation, you know, a lot of subtitle work. We did the filming in 2006, came back, worked on it. I went to Romania 3 different times. Me and Matthew went there twice, spent 7 months actually in Romania doing all this. So, and, you know, and it just came out a month ago, so it's taken 3 years or so.
Wow.
It's a long process, but I hope if it does well, you know, I've gotten a lot of good feedback from the people who've watched it, you know. And
now tell me, where's your next movie going to be? If you were able to do another documentary, where would you shoot for?
Well, I'm going to make it hard on myself again, I think.
Well, that's the only way to do it.
And I would like to go to Western Africa, Togo, Benin, Southeastern Ghana, and
really
get the story.
That would be very interesting.
The voodoo story.
You need
the
to
voodoo
do that.
Stories.
Yes, sir.
We're there with it. I'm ready to buy it now.
So. I'll sign you up for pre-order.
All right. Thank
there
you.
We go.
I mean, I'll be honest with you. It was, you know, I saw the preview. I think I was telling you about this. The trailer was very, it set the tone, and then it delivered.
Can we put the trailer on our site?
Might be able to.
Can we do that so people out there can check it out? Because that's where it hooks you. The trailer hooks you.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you guys just email me or we'll figure it out? I'm not very good with the internet. But
okay.
We have the trailer on our website, and then we also made a small pod to put up on current.tv. And if anybody wants to check that out, they can search Vampires Transylvania on Current TV and they can watch that. But the website is actually acrosstheforest.com.
Oh, I can put that on there. I have the I'll put the trailer on right now. So
sure.
Nick's crazy with that stuff.
Yeah, I'm.
He's stealing your trailer and putting it on our website.
Piracy.
All right, time to go.
Hey, tell us real quick that it's okay if we take your
trailer. Absolutely.
We got a recorder.
Signed statements. It's on record.
All right, Justin. This is all the time that we have for you. We will be getting in touch with you. We will be working with you more, and we will be on you about that next DVD.
Absolutely. Well, thanks so much for talking with
us. We've already got people in the chat room saying, you better go out and make that next movie, Justin.
They need to go out right now and buy the DVD.
To
finance. Yes.
To finance this next expedition.
I endorse it.
There we go.
AcrossTheForest.com is the place to do it. So.
Yeah, we have it up right on our website. If you know, whispersradio.com. You'll see the picture we were talking about, the old lady holding the icon with the boombox behind it, which is the cover of the DVD. Click on that. It'll go straight to where you can buy that. And
there you go.
It'll help.
All right, Justin, thank you very much for joining us. Like I said, we're going to be keeping in touch.
It's a great conversation. Thank you, guys.
Yes, sir. Justin Blair, everybody. The DVD is Across the Forest. What do you think about that one, Biffy?
I tell you what, that was interesting. It's always nice to hear people and, you know, their travels and the stories that they bring back. I think that's what's most intriguing, especially a place like that, you know, Transylvania, where I'm sure probably most of us haven't visited. And
yeah.
And you go and, you know, to listen to Justin, you know, tell the stories of the people in the villages, it was interesting.
I think it was a lot more interesting than the last time Biff was our producer. We had a gentleman on that I don't want to say was uninteresting. I want to say that I think everybody who had to sit through, and I don't know if it made it to the UPRN, but I know all of our friends here in Wheeling cried when that show aired. So we were praying, please. I hope there's some substance today, and I'm hoping Biff was it better.
Oh, and like I said, you know, listening to Justin and you know all the stories that he you know got to tell was interesting. It was very interesting.
No, let me tell you, you got to watch the DVD. I know Lola's already writing us on Pow Talk saying I want to watch it. You know, but this old woman,
slap you so hard.
She's not here yet. But I mean, this old woman, I mean, there's nothing like it talking just as calmly as, you know, we're talking right here about how this woman's spirit that just died, she was making the dinner food, the funeral dinner. And like all of a sudden her animals started, you know, scurrying around. She goes out there and she believed that the ghost of the woman or the vampire type entity was attacking her animals. She called for somebody to fetch her husband. They go back to the funeral. Everybody's gathered around the body. You know,
kind
the funeral's
like
going on.
Picture being at a wake, and then all of a sudden, this someone saying, she "Okay, says, we need to leave the room for a little
bit." She says, "Everybody leave for a second," and then she grabs a it was like.
Well, they were looking for a nail and they were looking for a hammer, and they couldn't find a nail and hammer, so they took like a needle.
It was
from,
a
like,
big
a weave.
Like a hemp weave. They took this huge needle, stuck it in, and beat it in with a log.
Yeah.
And then
they
put the
clothes
okay,
back
everybody
up,
come
everybody
on back
in.
And she's telling it calm as anything. She's like, yeah, I was a lot braver. And she's like, when they did it, the mouth like opened and twisted and I guess blood was running. I mean, it's like,
And Jordan and I are both looking at each other like,
did she just say that?
We rewound.
Crazy.
And
stuff.
The thing is you listen to it and like, you know, there were so many different stories where it was kind of like, just the subtext of like, you really believe them that they experienced this stuff. It was, you know, the guy I was talking about, the spirit of the woman that tried to, I want to say seduce him. I mean, that's what the demon or the spirit does. I don't want to say demon. She just all of a sudden shows up in his camp. What does he say? God curse her at the beginning. You know, there's this, whatever he called her. God curse her. And I'm thinking, what now? You know, so, I mean, it's a lot of fun. It's very interesting. Buy it. You'll love it, especially if you love this kind of stuff. I can't recommend it enough. We got to send him to Africa.
We got zombies? That'd be sweet. Nikki, who we got next week?
Next week, we have Andy Lloyd. He's going to be talking with us about the Dark Star Theory.
Now, what is Dark Star Theory?
I'll probably butcher it like crazy because the Dark Star Theory talks about another star in our solar system. It'll be interesting. I think Dark Star, I'll try to, darkstar.co.uk, darkstar1.co.uk, I believe is the website if you want to check out a little bit more about it. His name's Andy Lloyd. And then Neil Adams. A lot of people out there might know Neil Adams from he drew a lot of comic books.
We're building our geek army.
I pull up the thing about Neil Adams, and Jordan sees the picture of Green Lantern. He grabs me by the shirt and starts screaming at my face, "Green Lantern! He drew Green Lantern!" And then he runs off like gibbering.
Like, I go around to Kelly. You know?
He drew the Green Lantern!
And we had to calm him down, put him back in his chair.
I'm a Green Lantern fan.
But he's going to be talking to us about, I'm sure we'll be talking about Green Lantern for a little bit.
All of our nerd fans out there will be happy.
Yeah, but we're also he's going to be talking to us about the expanding Earth theory, which is the one of the theories that says that the Earth is expanding in size, which caused the continents to drift apart and so forth.
That'll be good stuff.
Yeah.
Hey, that's all the time we got for this week, folks. Thank you, Biff, for joining us.
No problem, guys. I enjoyed it.
Lola, come back safe and not too burnt.
Please, I can't believe you didn't throw in. Please don't hurt me when you get back for making fun of you.
Please don't hurt me for coming back. All right, until next
week,
everybody.
She just threw up a demon face. You're in trouble.
Wow, she did. Look at that.
Jordan won't be here next week.
Until then, don't be afraid. Only believe.